This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Welcome to the Lorehounds and our special coverage of the PBS miniseries The American Revolution. This is episode 5, The Soul of All America. I'm David. I'm one of the main hosts on the Lorehounds. And with me, as always, is Brian8063, one of our lore masters. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Late Friday afternoon recording. Yep. I feel a little bit like the scene with Goodfellas with Ray Liotta, you know, with the helicopter chasing him around. You know, so it's been one of those days.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're about to start our Thanksgiving holidays, so it's been rather busy.
Yes.
Right. So this project has been more of a sort of a reaction rather than an analysis podcast. We've been just sort of watching and reacting rather than really thinking deeply or organizing our thoughts so much. So it's a little bit different for us from our normal fare, but it's been good. I think people have been enjoying it, and we're getting a lot of conversation on the Discord. Yeah. We don't have any feedback today, but we've gotten a few pieces of feedback. If you want to send something in, lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. You can do a voicemail, just record a voice note and email it in, or send us an email. Once the series concludes, which tonight will be the final terrestrial airing, it's available, the whole thing's available for streaming, Brian and I are going to get together with Marilyn R. Pakila for a special wrap-up series. If you've been around the Lorehounds, you know that Marilyn R. Pakila is our favorite Tolkien scholar. She is also a research librarian. That was her profession. And she's lived in the New England area and participated and knows a lot about American history from the time of the Revolution. So it's going to be a really great conversation. We've already taken a piece. She shared with us her running notes document. It's dense.
It is dense.
There's a lot going on, but that's going to be very cool. As we mentioned, we have a Discord. There's a great conversation that's happening there. So we invite you to join our Discord. It's a well-moderated space and a lot of really great people talking about all the shows and movies that we enjoy. If you like what we've been doing, it would be great if you maybe gave us some positive words and a positive rating on Apple Podcasts. It just helps keep our podcast alive on the rankings. And if you want to support what we do, we're independent podcasters. Subscribing is a great way to help us complete and pay for and do all the things that we got to do. And there are links in the show note. There's a link tree. Can go there. It's got a Patreon link, got a Supercast link if you want one or the other. And of course, we are a little mini network as well, and we have a whole bunch of affiliate podcasts. Go check them out as if you want to know more about our larger community. As we've mentioned on every podcast here, Brian, you're a professional historian. We sort of set up your bona fides in episode one, and we got this little template which you brought forward, which we use to analyze the podcast so that we're not just sort of wandering aimlessly through the forests of New England. That said, we always like to kind of start off with our reflections from the previous episode. We don't have any feedback today.
Okay.
So any new big picture thoughts relative to previous episodes or where we are in the season overall?
So a couple things. One is, I'm really becoming grateful for Burns' ability to tell these stories about women, mm-hmm. Black, enslaved, and freed, and Native Americans. Because as we talked before in the previous episodes, these are stories that we really don't hear much about.
Right.
And if you do hear about it in high school or wherever, maybe even college as well, if you're in a survey class, you may not get a whole lot there either.
Okay.
And so this is an opportunity, I hope, for a lot of people, including myself, to really begin to rethink and to explore these new topics. It's really very important and very interesting.
It's like he is taking all the different scholarship that might have already been out there, but just not, he's connecting the dots to all of this stuff and maybe creating some linkages and some bridges where there might have been some silo walls in the past. And hopefully that will open up the intellectual and academic space in classes and in books and things like this, and looking at these cross-cutting. They're not cross-cutting. I mean, it's all happening in the same time, in the same place. But artificially, we haven't been telling holistic stories.
That's right. That's right. And Burns is very good, experienced storyteller. If you go on the app, you'll see already like maybe anywhere between 5 or 4 minutes to 8 minutes of little clips about topics. So I could totally see a teacher taking one of those clips about women or Black, right, Native Americans, and playing those for your student, for your students. And what a great way to start off conversation.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah. And the other thing I was thinking about, and we talked about this before, but I'm going to bring something a little bit new to it, is that I do think that maybe we could have used 8 or 10 episodes where I really think that we're missing some stories, like, for example, the Articles of Confederation, which I have to admit, I totally forgot that they started debating about that during the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening at the state congresses? Those were very important things that were going on. And I mentioned here in the outline about James Madison. He was in Virginia. He was working on the state constitution of Virginia. And he was very interested in religious tolerance.
Okay.
And he would work with Jefferson years later about getting the first bill for religious tolerance on board. So in this country. So, these are a lot of discussions that are happening in these, maybe, 13 places that, maybe if we had like maybe a couple more episodes, they can kind of pivot over there a little bit and kind of talk about some of those interesting discussions. So, but it is what it is. Still good.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to have been a fly on the wall in their deliberations on the size and scope of the project.
Yeah.
There, as we talked before, who knows what's on the cutting room floor for how they decided to put this together and what they maybe put together, but then didn't make the final edit.
Yes.
And I definitely agree. I mean, we talked about the Vietnam documentary, the Vietnam War documentary, and that was, what did I say, 18 hours?
18 hours.
Yeah, this is 12.
Yeah.
So it's not that he doesn't have it in him.
Right.
We know that. So.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I am, I'm feeling a little exhausted, not only just sort of in life, but in trying to keep, run a pace of watching 2 hours of dense content every night. And then also tomorrow, like I said, we're going to be starting our vacation. So we're going to see about recording the last episode. I don't know how much we can squeeze much more out of this until we get to a conversation with Marilyn. So I think we might play that by ear a little bit.
That makes sense.
A couple of small reflections. We got our first mention of Hamilton and Aaron Burr. Hey. But it was like, wait, oh, they got their horse shot out. Wait, what? And then nothing else. So, and I know that Hamilton was involved in translating the Barons' training manuals for the army at Morristown as they were drilling there. And we got no other mention of any of that kind of stuff. So it's very interesting because we know that Ken Burns knows the effect of Hamilton. So why, like there's just nothing there. And it's interesting. I wonder what the decision is there to have kept him out for so much of the conversation. So.
Yeah, maybe it's ground that's already covered and you wanted to move on, but
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard to understand. There was, again, we've been watching as a family every night, and then I've been doing a little game where I'm trying to identify the famous actors now. Oh, Paul Giamatti. Oh, Reese Matthews, is that his name? Or, you know, these different people. Or who did I hear? Kenneth Branagh the other day.
Yes.
So, you know, it's been fun to do that, to try to see if I can pick those names up. The other thing that I'm really starting to pick up on, and it's something that you were talking about in just your reflections, which is how he's taking these little vignettes of regular people. And oftentimes, I think he's equally spread it around, but we're hearing voices of free or enslaved Black Americans. We are hearing voices of Native Americans. We're hearing voices of women. We're hearing voices of just of white landowning men, but who are sort of caught up in this. But they are within the fabric of the story, interspersing these small points of view among the bigger elements of the story that's going on, so that we never lose touch with the effect of the war. And I think in past, maybe we'd have gotten that a little bit, but we never would have gotten the perspective of a woman trying to manage her home front while her husband is away on the war, or being attached to that, or, you know, an enslaved person or a Native American. We never would have gotten those little vignettes. And so he's really, because they're a team. They really seem to have taken a lot of care in bringing in those average person voices and seamlessly connecting them into the overall narrative arc.
So true. Every episode, we make sure we get those little small vignettes. So important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing I had was thinking about what you said that your son said about big ideas. And I had this thought, and I don't know, you know, I am no historian. I am no academic. So, this is not an authoritative thought at all. This is just sort of a reflection that I'm having, which is that I wonder if we're a nation that does better when we've got like a big project or a goal or an objective in front of us. It seems when we don't have a revolutionary war or a world war or a space race or a cold war or something like that. But when the country, you know, during this revolutionary war, when things kind of come to a certain point and, you know, here's an enemy and here's a problem or whatever, New Englanders and Southern states and, Polish families and Native American tribes members, they can come together and they can focus on that problem, you know, be it a British, you know, forces or something like that, and really show up and apply a lot of effort and energy into solving that issue. So, you know, be it civil rights, be it anything, you know, there's something when we have something clear in front of us as a nation, is this a national character, that we kind of need something to push against. We kind of need something to tax our, that's not the right way to say it. But if we're not grappling with something large, you know, goal-directed behavior, what you might say in parenting, yeah, right, or working with kids, if we don't have some sort of goal in front of us, we don't perform as well as when we do. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. That may be completely, you know, there may be people who take issue with that. That's totally fine. Again, I'm just sort of, it was a thought that arose when I was thinking about what your son said.
I think you're onto something. You know, it's when I look at these kinds of presidents over time and seeing the scale of human history, it's this big goal. It's being tested. Mm-hmm. You know, a country's being tested by war or by massive injustice that I think helps rally a country toward, you know, a certain certain ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think it does happen maybe at a local level that we may not even notice. Like there may be something like an issue in the schools that rile up parents.
Mm-hmm.
So something happens, you know, in response. But yeah, it's one of those things that I think that we as human beings have to be, maybe the stakes have to be kind of higher in our face because, you know, we're in a country of peace for a long time. You lose that vocabulary, use those skills to kind of test yourself. It's interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's something we'll talk to Marilyn about. That would be kind of interesting. We'll maybe put a pin on that.
Right.
Yeah.
There is I'm not saying we're flawless in that.
Yeah.
But when we as a country decide about something, we seem to be able to apply a lot of leverage to that issue. And be quite effective. Once we can agree upon, we can internally align ourselves on that goal or that objective. And be that an internal issue or an external issue, external to our national boundaries. But when enough of us align, we are very effective as a nation.
We are. And if you want to...
And I'm not saying good, right? I'm not talking about moral good or moral bad. I'm just saying effective.
Yes.
Our ability to execute on our intentions.
Yes. Yes. And if you want to stop that, if you feel that objectives are not in your best interest, you can muddy the waters. Propaganda or something like that kind of diffuses the momentum.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? You're thinking a specific example?
I'm thinking about maybe today, right? Where it's getting harder in our polarized environment, harder for enough people to get together to do something. It does happen, but...
But we're starting to see some shifts in that.
Yes. Yes, yes.
I don't want to get into active politics. I was thinking kind of when you were talking just now, I was thinking about the Vietnam War when enough people started to think, this is really bad. Like, this is really a really bad thing. We need to end this. We did. We changed, the population expressed themselves to the point where a presidency fell, in part because of that. Right.
Yes.
Nixon undid Nixon, I think, is the real issue. But the opposition to the Vietnam War was massive at its height.
Yes. Yes. There were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of constant, especially student, college student. Yeah. Yes. And that was trickling up to the politicians saying, okay, we're getting pressure and my moral center, my morality is telling me this is just, we need to stop this. This is just going way off the rails.
Now, when I said, Nixon undid Nixon, it's his hubris in wanting to record his audio recordings are what undid him, right? He undid himself.
Yes. Yes, yes. And he wanted to wait to end the war after the election of 1772. So
1772?
Sorry, 1972. Yeah, feels that way. 1972. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, okay. So we're not here to debate
good stuff.
Modern
good stuff.
Politics.
Yeah.
And again, I'm no historian. I'm just a dude with a microphone. I'm just a guy at the end of the bar.
So
I don't want people to take me as an authoritative. I just want to, I'm just a guy.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right. No feedback today. So we're going to get right into the discussion. Episode 5, The Soul of All America. This covers December 1777 to May 1780. So we kind of span back out here a little bit.
We sure do.
This covers Valley Forge, the naval campaigns of John Paul Jones, the Battle of Monmouth, Kaskakee, the Battle of Newport, Savannah, the Fort Pitt Treaty, the Battle of Vincennes, the Battle of Stony Point, and Palace Hook. Is that what it's called, or Sandy Hook? Maybe that's different. Well, that wasn't really a battle.
Hook. Yeah.
The Sullivan Campaign in New York, and then the Battle of Charleston. Brian, over to you.
All right. Thank you. So our first question up, as usual, is what things stood out? And I think for me to, I'm not laughing, but, well, I am laughing, but it's you know, I'm thinking of something else. But France in this war that stood out for me is that the country's in it for themselves.
Okay.
And when we go through class, again, like through high school, you think about Lafayette and how he was really interested in liberty. And there were certainly people in France who were interested in liberty and equality, trying to break down the monarchy. But those, especially in the political class and the military class, they're in this war for themselves. And I think if France had their army and navy ready earlier, they might have gotten into the war earlier, but they just had to wait, right? Mm-hmm. So they were militarily ready, and then they could strike and create retribution against the British for losing in the last war. So something that stood out for me is France, like a lot of imperial powers, are in war for themselves, not necessarily
for the ideals.
Exactly. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and we can see that with the, was he an admiral? I'm not sure what, I can't remember what his rank is, but the guy who was sailing around and then he was like, meh, I'm going home.
Yes. Yes. Destin. Like,
yeah.
Yes. Destin, admiral. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. You're like, bro, what's up?
That's what I was laughing about, actually.
Okay.
we'll bring him up in a minute, but okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I got to go to the Caribbean, man. I got to go. So whatever.
Yeah, and I guess they went down there to refit probably and reorganize and a little
strike
bit.
Strike against
the British because ships. And there's more opportunity to I forget what it's called, but when you take an enemy ship and then you send it back and then you get the proceeds from that.
Yeah, the privateering.
Yeah, well, not the privateering. There's another name for it. And I can't remember. Joseph Conrad. It is Joseph Conrad who wrote the Aubrey Maturin book. So that's my historical source. But when a naval ship took an enemy's ship, and it had whale blubber or tea or money or sugar or whatever, if it had goods in it and stuff, not only did you get to sell the ship. And, you know, at least in the England, the Admiralty Court, I think is who did it. They would sell the ship, they would sell the material.
Yes.
And then the proceeds of that would then go back to the captain's pocket and then distribute. Yes. And then everybody in the crew would get a percentage of the, sale.
Exactly. I don't think contraband is the right word, but we're getting closer. I think to this idea, I guess, I don't know. It's a Friday night.
So going down to the, yes, it is. Yeah. Going down to the Caribbean and, you know, scooping up some of those, then you put a little skeleton crew on it, you send it back, and then it gets, because then your side can take that ship into service. You can take those goods and sell them on the market. And so some of that money goes back into the coffers of the government, and then some of that money goes into the pockets of the captain and the officers and then the crew who all get bits and pieces of it.
That's right. That's right. It's a pretty good deal. People are motivated.
Incentive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very motivated. And you're not going to do it in the colonies. I'm going to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
The other thing is the stalemate in New England and the middle colonies for 3 years. I kind of forgot about that. That's a long time. That's
3 years,
a long time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I cannot imagine as a commander, you know, around Philadelphia, New York City, just waiting while all the other action happens in another part of the field. It's really, that stuck with me. for sure.
Okay.
And finally, the Clinton proclamation, same mm-hmm. thing like with Dunmore. Once again, in the same theme that and we're not really believing in abolitionists. We're not abolitionists, but we're going to use slaves and freeing them as a tool us to be victory, for victory. So that is one of those things like the Dunmore Proclamation that is another tool for them. So that stood out.
I've got some thoughts on similar, on related things as we get later on. My things that for what stood out, one, what must it have been like to be in Washington's presence? They really made a point of that. When he shows up, he'll just appear on the battlefield and the troops are like, oh, well, let's turn around and go back and face the enemy. And it's just wild that he has that kind of aura and leadership quality. So, but for not him, we would not be podcasting right now. I mean, who knows, whatever, but that his aura and his presence really was a real palpable thing on the landscape in and around these battles.
Yes. You know, there were other generals like that had that gravitas, but it's far and few between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really funny when the one historian was saying, oh, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but you know, the great man theory. I mean, yes. is this the example that proves the rule or you know, breaks or whatever, you know, that he was just dumbfounded the fact that he was confronting the fact that, well, Washington is kind of a great man. So
exactly.
How do I process this?
That's right.
The exception that proves the rule. That's
right. That's it. Yes.
So a couple of other things that we get a lot of the story of the economics of war here. He doesn't go deep into it, but I think it stood out for me. And then there was this thing, which I've always kind of thrown around as a funny little quote, not really realizing that it was from somewhere, which is the business of America is business. You know, whenever I see American businesses that are there, why are you doing this? Or what is this about? That's just about business. It's not that you're trying to make a better widget. You're just trying to do business is what you're trying to do. And that so many Americans were making money off of the war in so many different ways. So that mercantilism, that industry, that ability, that wanting to conduct your affairs in that way has been present for quite a long time in our country. The quote originally comes, apparently, I had to internet mm-hmm. search this, Calvin Coolidge, 1925, a speech to some newspaper editors. And the full quote is, after all, the chief business of the American people is business. They are profoundly concerned with producing, buying, selling, investing, and prospering in the world. And I think that's true. One of our you know, various national values. Not everybody, but it's a pattern that we see present in our population.
Yes. Whenever there's a war, there's a profit to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, like the Gilded Age, I was telling you last time with right. Alicia, you know, they started out of a lot of the Gilded Age robber barons started out making a fistload of money during the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think about that too, as well as I look at, you know, these noble visions that you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, like the New Deal,
mm-hmm.
where conservatives and businessmen were seeing this kind of lofty idea that you should be paid for the work that you do and you should be paid well. There are a lot of businessmen, especially rich corporations, who did not like the New Deal and thought that,
right.
Yeah, FDR was a dictator and that they pushed hard against the New Deal. And so it does ebb and flow we get different kinds of policies and things like that. That's a very, very observant.
Well, and then we had the New Deal, and then we had a whole bunch of regulations that we've been deregulating from the Reagan era on, airlines, the movie industry, banking, all of these things. And so as certain sectors try to play the game of regulatory capture, you know, to change those, then the people are like, this kind of sucks. We're going to push back. And then we have some sort of flip around, and we put in some more rules and regulations saying, you know, monopolies are bad, and we need to regulate this business so that we get a fair marketplace. Yeah, there's a tension there that's always going back and forth.
Exactly. Anything else on standing out? Great. Okay. Next up, what did we like?
One of the things that stood out, another thing that stood out for me, and this sort of follows on from the Washington mention that I had, which is leadership needs to be adaptable. That as a leader, you yourself need to be adaptable. You need to be adaptable to who you're leading and to the circumstances that you're managing. It's a leadership is almost a process as much as it is anything else. And we see that with Washington. He's suffered some major defeats. He's constantly on the verge of his army, you know, disbanding underneath him, but he keeps figuring stuff out in a way, some new strategies, some new ways to speak to the troops, some getting different help, trying different battle tactics, saying, hey, maybe I'm not so great a tactical commander, so maybe Lafayette, you should get in this. Oh, the Baron. I forget the Baron's full name. They read out his whole name there. But hey, you know, you're good at training troops. You should do that. So Washington is constantly adapting his leadership style and who he empowers to lead so that they can achieve the goal. And so, yeah, the idea, I really like this idea that leadership is a process, not a virtue as such.
It's a great point where I remember an earlier episode where Washington, for example, knew nothing about artillery. So he got a couple books on artillery.
Right.
So he could learn. And that is a state of mind that is so vital for good leaders, everyone from business to the military to politics. That's just an extremely good rule of thumb that if you can learn and adapt, then you're going to be much, much more successful.
Yeah. And if I think to take it even further, if you're authentic about it, then that garners you even more respect by the people that you're working with. And it's an example that people can follow and see that it's not my way or the highway kind of things, but like, oh yeah, because we're all learning, right? As human beings, we're constantly learning until we're not.
That's right. And it's, you know, they didn't use the word culture in our modern sense we do, but you are trying to create that kind of culture, that command culture.
Yeah.
That, what's interesting is that Washington brought that same kind of, let me ask around of my officers to get input and so I could learn, to creating his cabinet as president. He was the first president to create a cabinet, and it's not in the Constitution, but he decided to do that way because he learned that way in the Revolution.
Interesting. Okay. There you go. Yeah. The other thing I liked was the Baron.
Yes.
He was a lot of fun.
And swearing in different languages. Yes.
And then I liked learning about the, you know, in military circles, they talk about esprit de corps and the morale of your units. And by just doing some basic skill training and teaching them a little bit more context of soldiery, there's a famous example of if you or I were taken out to a Major League Baseball field and we had a Major League pitcher throw a fastball at us and we were playing and we're the catcher, it would be a terrifying experience for you or I. But if we had a couple of weeks of training, we could probably catch a reasonably pitched ball and handle it because our context has been shifted. We've gotten some training and so we've gotten a little confidence and we feel a little bit better about ourselves. So teaching the soldiers how to drill and how to form a line and how to tactically retreat and, you know, doing these various things. And then suddenly they're like, oh yeah, we can do this. This is cool. And then that makes them more of an effective fighting force. I liked that. I liked learning that that was being employed for Washington's troops.
Exactly. It's a time where there was no standing army in this country. And one of the important elements of standing army and professionalized army is to drill mm-hmm. and learn how to do these things, which we're just flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's one thing to be able to load your musket. It's another thing to be able to do it effectively and as a unit so that you can fire a volley in unison, and that's going to be more effective.
Exactly. Create more damage and injury.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is just terrible to think about, the fact of having a whole bunch of lead balls flying at you. And anyway, let's move on.
Yes.
War is terrible.
War is hell. I enjoy the privateers, the story there. And this great fact about the sugar trade was cut by 2/3.
Amazing.
That is amazing. That is such an important cash crop to the British that they were effectively cutting that off. Was amazing. Just amazing.
Isn't it funny that for the tea, they want to drink tea, then you need milk, you know, you need sugar. And need sugar for other things, that these are luxury goods. These aren't necessarily survival goods.
No. People love their sweets, right? You got to have them, everybody.
And that was a part of the global economy, along with silk and other things and tobacco, right? All of these.
That's right.
It's fascinating.
Yes. And one of the privateers, Greenwood, ends up becoming George Washington dentist.
Wasn't he the Pfeiffer kid? Yeah. Or was he somebody else?
No, someone else. Okay. Someone else. And he ended up, making the famous dentures. That's classic.
Yeah.
You never know what happens, right? Yeah, small world. Right.
Exactly.
And then I thought it was what I really liked was a very short but sweet explanation of colonial debt, which is going to play an important element when we form our federal government. And he brings this up multiple times in the show that the colonial paper money is worthless.
Right.
So you gotta use your debt by the states to raise their debt to pay for stuff. And
then going back to Hamilton, I learned that, you know, Hamilton made our debt competitive.
Yes.
And that's how we were able to fund our central government.
That's right. That's right. Without the debt, Hamilton couldn't take that as a tool to kind of like
build the nation. Yeah.
Build the nation. Yeah. So there is good debt out there, even though as we face car debts and credit cards. Mm. But no worries, people. It's not all bad.
Yeah. There's an advantage to debt if it's managed correctly.
That's right. Managed correctly. Exactly.
Because you can do things like build a school or build a highway. Yes.
That's right. All right. So on the flip side, what did we dislike?
I didn't have a lot in my notes here. The one thing, though, was just the there's a lot to dislike about war and things. But the one thing that was really bothering me, I guess, and rightly so, is just this like irrational racism towards Native Americans.
Yes.
And the way there's an irony that, okay, yeah, maybe the British were using enslaved and Native Americans in a cynical way, but that mm-hmm. then ultimately the British were better allies than the Americans, like the whole tragedy of going, okay, well, we'll fight with the Patriots. And then ultimately the Patriots, you know, are the people who do the undoing of Native American societies across the country. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had something very similar to to that with Clark's campaign.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah,
yeah, where he just viciously wanted to wipe out and to settle the land. I mean, it was just brutal.
Yeah.
And then White Eyes' death that kills the Fort Pitt Treaty.
Right.
That
it really sort of sets the stage for the way that Native Americans get treated going forward. Treaties, broken treaties constantly.
Absolutely. You're forgotten. Exactly. Broken or forgotten. Who cares? You know, we're just going to take
it. Just going to ignore it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're, what? Treaty? What? Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I disliked was the retribution in New York City.
Yeah.
And we're going to see more of this, I'm sure. Right? The hanging of the Quakers and more patriots. It was just, again, another just brutal situation again and again throughout this war.
The sort of purging of, going into, or when they went into Philadelphia.
Yes.
And anybody who
was same thing. Yes.
A whiff of loyalist about them.
Exactly. And it's like, they also, you could use that as your weapon. If you didn't like the guy or this person, he's like, oh yeah, yeah, I saw him. He was like,
Or he's a competitor, a business competitor.
Business competitor, exactly. Yeah.
You covet something else of theirs.
That's right.
Hey, he's got a nice house or whatever. So
that's right. And finally, the French Admiral D'Estaing, as Jean would like to say, he can kick rocks. I can't imagine like Eisenhower's seeing the British, you know, preparing D-Day, the British comes along. Oh, yeah, we're going to go to Africa. I don't know when we're back, but you do you. See you later. You'd have a stroke.
This is something I had in my what surprised me the most list, but I'll mention it now, is personalities over goals. I mean, I know it exists, and I've we've all dealt with it all of our lives in work and school and in life, where somebody is exercising personal authority or their personality in a way that's contradictory to maybe the group project or the quarterly sale or whatever, that personalities over goals. And we see this with everybody a lot. And you're like, man, you're fighting a war. You came here to fight, you know, this thing. But your personality wise, you decide that that's just not, you're not into it. And you're just going to go. It boggles my mind. Just absolutely boggles my mind. It will always boggle my mind until my final days.
The amazing egos that are around, right? Yeah. Okay. So we have, what would you want to know more about? So for me, I'm very interested in the women and the children's lives in the Army. This has been brought up, but they kind of hover around it a little bit longer in this episode. And what an interesting life, a hard life, right? Because you're moving around with the Army and you kind of settle down maybe in a city for a while, but then you have to uproot yourself and then move. But at the same time, as Burns was saying, that women, especially women, were really important to do some of the things that need to be done for the Army.
Right.
You know, everything from cooking and cleaning.
Tending the wounded.
Yeah, wounded, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, burying the dead.
There's a lot of domesticity that needs to be managed for in a camp of people.
Yes.
And if you're busy drilling, there's other things that need to be attended to so that a group of human beings can live hygienically and do all the take care of all the things that we need to take care of to not live in absolute squalor.
That's right. And the other thing I was thinking about was, you know, New York City during the war, we meant a loyalist traveling with Britain for protection.
Right.
Yeah, that I didn't really fully appreciate, that I would really like to know more about. So
were you ever a fan of the Battlestar Galactica story?
Yes. I saw the original and the reboot.
And it did. Mm-hmm. I thought of that a couple of times listening to the episode the other night about these traveling bands. So here's this military unit, and then there's this whole host of civilians who are like, protect us, like, don't go, we gotta stay close to you. it really made me think of that in a way. So anyway, whatever. We're the Lorehounds. We
that's right.
Cross our IPs all the time. So
nice. All right, David, how about you? What do you got?
I would love to know more about the Native American communities in the Finger Lakes region and that part of New York. I've never been to that region. We had a friend visit there once, pre-pandemic. Some school family that we knew from the same daycare, and they went there for a holiday, and I got a text from my buddy, and he was like, this place is amazing. He was like, you cannot believe it. It's so beautiful and peaceful and nice. And so to learn that there's these Native American communities that are prospering and they have homes with glass in them and all this kind of stuff, I just had, wow, okay, tell me more about that place.
Absolutely. Yeah, we visited the Finger Lakes ourselves. We grew up part of our lives in Erie, Pennsylvania, so it wasn't too long a drive to go over there, right? Check out the wineries. They have lovely wine. And I was blown away as well by the settlements there by Native Americans. Amazing.
Cool. John Paul Jones sounded like an interesting character. Mm-hmm. He was cruising around. I don't think I recognized his name at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about him and how he was able to prosecute his aspect of the war. And then the other thing I would like to know more about is, how did the process of exchanging prisoners actually work? Who met where, under what circumstances, and how did they actually negotiate out the lists? And you look at a name, oh, Lieutenant so-and-so, or B Company of the 504th, or whatever, 400 men, and we have, this unit over here of 300 men, so we'll, but that's not worth that. How did that actually happen? How did you say, I'm going to trade this for that? And then how did those instructions go out so that when they get released or moved around, whatever, there's just a whole bunch of logistics and mechanical components to exchanging prisoners and doing the whole parole thing that I find really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The paperwork involved.
Exactly.
Even in the 1700s, right? Must be a lot.
Yeah. Wild.
All right. So we have some of the surprise, what surprised us most, you mentioned about the personalities.
Right.
Anything else?
Yeah, the couple of ironic things here. I think I mentioned this already, that the British as being more attractive allies for enslaved and Native Americans, offering them better deals, so to speak, there's just a painful irony there. And then there's another weird irony, which is the region called New England seems to be fighting harder against the British than the southern states are, where there's more loyalists, the affection more present. I just found that kind of funny in an ironic way, that those who are part of New England are like, we don't want anything to do with England, but we're going to keep all of our names and, our place names that we took from England. So,
right. Well, we want independence, but not full independence because we like this name.
Yeah.
It's
very strange.
It's like too much work to change a name. I mentioned the Fort Pitt Treaty, and it was interesting that they were thinking about creating a Native American state.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that's amazing. Even if the Fort, we won't know, we will never know if it would ever have happened.
Right. Because we created space for Native American communities, and then, as we mentioned before, ignored it or just blatantly violated it.
Exactly. I have a feeling that we would probably have pushed through it. And it's like, sorry.
But still, there was an idea there.
There was an idea. Exactly. That surprised me. That was pretty, there's a lot of forward thinking there.
Okay.
And then John Lawrence, who was an abolitionist in South Carolina. He's the one who wrote to his dad saying, "Hey, Dad, why don't we just free our slaves? I like to, you know, free our slaves." And of course, Dad said, "Forget about that." But that is also, that's a famous name. They're a pretty powerful family. I remember reading or knowing that name in my Monticello days.
Okay.
But I thought that was interesting. That abolitionist.
I hate to bring up the Hamilton of it all, but he was he plays prominently in the musical as a friend of Hamilton.
Oh, yes. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I know it as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently they were best friends on Washington's staff.
Makes sense.
Lawrence was an avid abolitionist, according to the Hamilton musical, because I haven't actually studied his actual real biography.
The final group of 40,000 feet. What are the stories Burns is telling, and how well did he tell it? So the couple things that I have here is the tragic Native American story in this episode. I mean, my heart was broken.
Right.
All the campaigns that it went through, the burning, the killing, the scalping. I was reminded that scalps were actually sold. So there's a financial incentive to get to that, all that, which is doubly horrible. And then it just broke my heart. I just almost in tears, just watching that part, those parts of that story. But it was really, and that tells you, right? It's a moving story, an important story.
Yeah. And as we were saying before, not part of the revolutionary time period that it's been known, but it hasn't been told in a mass market audience kind of way.
Exactly. Exactly. And finally, it was interesting to see Britain kind of pivot. I thought it was a great kind of transitions that they use with New England and the middle colonies. They're done for 3 years. So let's go south. And we're going to take the southern colonists and we're going to keep the colonies, which I didn't really appreciate. It's like, oh, well, that makes sense, right? Because they had some good raw products, you know, material that they could really temperate profit climate. From. Different climate, exactly. They have Florida, so it's a, you know, you have that continuity. So you're setting up this British new strategy that really, I think, moves into the next episode. So it's a good bridge that he did for, I think, the last episode as we get more into battles and bloody
smart really strategy bloody on stuff. The British, all things considered.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they had. Well, anyway, I'm not going to relitigate the war. I'm not a military historian, but there's a thought that occurs to me, which is they could have just held on to the South and just let the New England states just be New England. Like, what do you have? What's up there that you need? There is no, you know, the trade is incidental. The real economic flywheel is with cotton and tobacco and sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Anyway, far be it from me to tell the British what to do or how to prosecute their war. But that goes into my final point, which is just the complexity of the theater in North America, from Montreal to Florida and all these places where all these battles that we think about, Concord and Lexington and Morristown and Valley Forge and Pennsylvania, whatever, George Washington. But there was stuff going on. There are forts all over the place. There are people all over the place.
Yeah.
And then the global nature of it and how much it pulled in the whole world into this war.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of those things that I also didn't appreciate how many forts were put up throughout the colonies.
Yeah, they showed some maps later on in the episode. I'm like, wait, what? There's forces?
Really?
Out? Like,
wow.
That why deep? Aren't they? Yeah.
Dang. Yeah. It's a great story.
And then, you know, even though maybe in China or Japan or nations and peoples that are there aren't necessarily directly engaged in the war or in the strategy that's happening in the Atlantic, that's still drawing and still affecting them in ways that are hard maybe to see directly, but indirectly through economic forces, the needing of supplies and materials to bolster, you know, because while this is all being drained over here, we still need to generate more over there to, you know, keep our economic direction going.
Yes, yes, you still gotta run your country and run your empire. So you gotta pivot to a lot of different places.
Yeah, can you imagine being in London and Buckingham Palace or whatever, wherever they were at that time, and then you're looking at the entire world and thinking about, okay, I need to take these forces from here and go there. And then we need to make sure that production up for this is up, and then because it's down over there. So there's a lot of complexity going on around the world at this time. And then you have it takes 3 to 6 months to get a message one way, let alone get a return answer. And then that boat gets sunk in a storm or, you know,
yes,
or
taken blown off course.
Yeah, all kinds of things. So,
yeah, you really get spoiled by mass communications and even the telegraph that I don't know how they did it.
Now we can do, you know, when I talk to Aisha or, you know, Alicia, I mean, dear goodness, we have our host Alicia, who's in Europe as well, and
yeah,
we're constantly podcasting with people from around the world.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, I feel tired.
Yes, we have ended.
We've done a lot of podcasting this week, and it's been a joy. Again, I'm going to be shifting things tomorrow, so we'll just have to figure out if we can get an episode 6 in, or if we should save it. We'll be watching it as a family tonight.
Okay.
And then you and I can just touch base and see where we go. It seems like people are watching, but, you know, probably watching at their own pace. So, you know.
That's right.
We'll get something out. Okay. As to everyone, thanks for hanging out with us. I mean, we're just a couple of guys talking and reflecting. So hopefully it's added something to your conversations. As always, if you appreciate what we do and you have some kind words, we love to have those on the Apple Podcast reviews. If you are so moved to want to subscribe, it helps us with our operations and make sure that we can keep doing this. Patreon or Supercast, there's a link in the show notes. Go check out all of our affiliates. If you are a Discord server booster, thank you so much for helping to create a space for our community to gather. And if you're a subscriber at any level, especially to all of our lore masters, thank you all so very much. Thank you, Brian, for all the work that you do in the community. You're one of our mods. You're a lore master. You're our editor in chief. You got to do a lot.
Yeah.
You got to do a lot. So hopefully we haven't shouldered you with too much, but you seem to always like to participate. It seems to be adding something for you. So.
Oh, it sure does.
I hope it's rewarding.
A great group.
Yeah. So, all right, everybody, we'll talk to you soon. Brian, thank you again so much. This has been a really enjoyable week. And then we'll see about the final episode and then the wrap-up podcast before too long.
Sounds good.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.